Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi.
We're mass communicating.
It's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see if it pays off for them.
This is the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.
I gave it a 10.
Sweep the leg. You have a problem with that.
And now, here are your hosts, Rocky LaFleur.
Everybody on? Good.
Great. Grand. Wonderful.
No yelling on the bus.
Josh Webb.
Sorry I had a fight familiar, your butt at the party.
And Jake Latondras.
I am bad news.
Also starring Rob Kroon.
I bet this guy's into the woods $100.
And Bradley Ramsey.
No, Mark, didn't say it.
Showtime.
All right, here we go. Hold your ears, folks. It's showtime.
Showtime, everybody! Showtime!
Welcome to the End of the Line podcast. I'm Rocky LaFleur in the Duck South Studios in Oxford, Mississippi. I got a surprise for you tonight. Joining us for our next series on the End of the Line podcast, Mr. Ryan Warden, Toe Tags LLC from Central Kansas, right, Ryan?
That's correct.
Now, Ryan and I, and it's probably been 5 or 6 years ago, you and I first initially spoke when I was still guiding day to day.
Yes,
you'd call me. You had started Toe Tags LLC, and I'll never forget the night you had sent me a message. Said, "Hey, you busy?" I said, "No, I don't have anything going on tonight. Give me a shout." This was before we had started the podcast, and you explained Toe Tags LLC and how you got into that, which a lot of you that are listening to this is going to find out is a very, very interesting story, and almost, Ryan, would you say full-esque?
Yeah, that would be good terminology.
I don't want to give away too much too soon because it's a great story. But you were a guide for a long time, right?
I was a guide for roughly 14 years.
There in Kansas?
Yeah, in Kansas. I started out in western Kansas around Hayes. I was working at a sporting goods store at the time and was a co-manager. My best friend at the time owned it, and we were all about everything in the outdoors, and we were a sporting goods store, so everybody constantly hit us up for donations. At that time, we had several thousand dollars in leases around Kerwin Federal Refuge and some pits, and we were hunting anyways. And so I made the suggestion of starting a guide service, and he kind of left that up to me.
And I'm not going to give it away, but you run into the feds in this
That's
story.
Correct.
And you start Toe Tags LLC. We can talk about the toe tags. I'm not worried about that. But tell us a little bit about that.
Toe Tags is a waterproof tagging system that I created based on federal law. It's some of the oldest federal law in the U.S. history. It came into place in 1918 under the Migratory Game Bird Treaty Act. Tagging was initially designed to eliminate or stop or slow down market hunting. Guys killing large volumes of ducks, geese, or migratory birds and selling them at meat markets in town. So the law was created for that, and over the course of time, all of that kind of went away and became, I guess, a known fact that you couldn't take your ducks to Walmart and sell them in the meat part of Walmart or try to sell them to Walmart. And so the law kind of became overlooked, and drifted off in the shadows, I guess you could say. And I think there's probably a large majority of people that don't know it exists or know when to properly use it. And based on some events that happened that you'll hear about later on the show, I became a subject matter expert on it and when and when not to carry. And through lots of reading and lots of communication with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services and local game wardens as well, education both ways, me educating them, them educating me, based on things I had read or things they knew. And so the business was created to basically help educate other hunters. And
hey, Ron, let me ask you this. You deal with this a lot. You like I said, you call me out of the blue, Mossy Island Outfitters, found me on the web, called me up and said, hey, starting this new business, love you guys to participate in it. And I'd already been tagging. I'd been tagging for, I have to say, for about 5 years before that. And let me ask, because we stayed on the phone that night probably 2 or 3 hours. Not only with your story, but in general, about a few major things. I'm going to walk through these with you real quick. Ryan, when you talk to people, what's the biggest mistake? Just an honest mistake or just stupid mistake because don't know hunters make in the field when it is pertaining to limits, tagging, blah, blah, blah.
Well, a lot of it is, you know, probably one of the big things that constantly stand out that all of us have done, and there's several, but one of the things that always kind of stood out to me after I figured it out, whether your birds are tagged in the field or not, you can't leave them. You have to be in direct possession of your limit while you're in the field. And in the field is loosely defined as on the lake or whatever. You couldn't leave me on an island and you take the duck boat back to drop off Charlie so he can go to church and take my ducks with you. My ducks have to remain with me until I leave out of the field. Another common
thing. But once they get to a truck, you can go ride with Charlie, and as long as they're tagged, Dan can have all the ducks in his truck, right?
That's correct. But one of the things that people do a lot, and I've done it as a guide, as an outfitter, and as a regular hunter, the end of the hunts came at mid-morning. I've been laying in a cornfield with 5 other guys in layout blinds. My ducks or geese were laying behind my blind. So they were technically separated. It doesn't matter at this point if they're tagged or not. I recommend tagging them. The game wardens like to see that. But it doesn't matter if they're tagged or not. I can't leave them. And on several occasions, I got up and shut my blind doors, left my gun, my bag, my shell bag in the blind, walked out, grabbed the truck as the outfitter and said, I'll be back to pick up everybody. And we'll go grab the truck and the trailer and start back out towards the field. Little did I know, I wasn't necessarily in violation of the law because I wasn't in possession of it. But every hunter that was laying back there in the blind was either over the limit or not in direct possession of their field possession limits because they had my limits mixed in with them. So you have to carry them out. I've even been as detailed on the phone to ask special agents from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services, what if we throw five limits on a four-wheeler? They're all tagged and separated. I drive the four-wheeler out, and the hunters simply carry their power hunter and their shotgun out. Is that a violation? And he stated, that is a violation. You have to be in possession of your birds, tagged or not, you get all the way out of the field. So I went on to ask him, is the tail, what do you consider out of the field? And the answer I got was the tailgate of the truck. Once you kind of get to the trucks and you get to the tailgate, it's kind of like a base, I guess. At that point, you can tag them. You can throw them all in a pile after they're tagged and mix them up. Larry can hold mine. Bob can hold yours. They can all go in the back of one pickup that Charlie drives to town and stops at the local store to grab bread, or we go back to the lodge or my house to start grilling. It doesn't matter. There's no violation at that point because he's transporting tagged birds.
Ryan, a couple of them want to run across you. One, you know, I see simple mistakes as not even separating birds, just piling them up in a blind. Just make it a big pile while you're in the field.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services. Yeah, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services told me they watch Facebook. All of us watch social media. They're hunting us on social media is what they're doing. You know, I've heard in the past, and I've heard Foyle say it, when the hunter has become the hunted, and that's really what's going on. I mean, the hunter is going and watching birds fly out, go to a certain location. Well, the game wardens are going out watching you watch the birds go to a certain location. They're hunting you while you're hunting the birds. But there's a lot of trolling across the internet, especially like Facebook. Guys have big piles of birds. You know, and it's real common amongst outfitters because they want to look successful. And I'm guilty of it, just as guilty as anybody else of it. We have all stuck out big piles, made nice piles, this and that, put the bigger birds in the bottom, smaller birds on top, something with bands laying across the top or whatever. There's no separation and there's no tagging at that point. Now, the issue at hand is the game wardens will tell you there has to be separation. Even no matter, it's across the board. When I talk to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, when I talk to the local game warden, anybody, if they know the law, they're all going to make the same statement. They're going to say the birds have to be separated. Now, the issue is, under 50 CFR 2035, 2036, 2037, all the way through that series of laws, there's nothing in there that talks about separation. What the federal law states is they have to be tagged. So when you ask a U.S. Fish and Wildlife guy and say, okay, you're telling me the law is separation. What law is that? They all come back with the same answer. Well, it can be written, if they're not separated or tagged, it can be written under anything. Now I'm asking you, what are you going to write me under if they're not separated? And when you re-ask the question like that, if the birds aren't separated and I have 50 dart geese in the back of my truck, even if I have the guys in the front of my truck that will fill those limits, what are you going to write me for if they're not separated and they're just in one big pile in the back of my truck or whatever? And he's going to tell you, he or she is going to tell you, they're going to write you for possession limit or they're going to write you for tagging. And I said, okay, so you're telling me that on the separation law side of it, what if I just tagged every one of them and had them all in a big pile? He said, which I was talking to at the time, said, then you would be fine. And he went on to say, if he grabbed the wing of one goose, brought a string of 40 snow geese out, and they were all tied together with zip ties, and he got to the very last one and it had a tag on it that said 40 snow geese and the proper information, the name of who harvested them, the date, etc., then that would be legal as well because they are all attached. So when you see guys zip tie the necks of a snow goose and tag one set of snow geese with one tag that says, you know, 12 snow geese, whatever, that's legal.
Here's the thing that bothers me about when you start talking about federal law, whether it be a state game, well, most feds are going to be feds, but especially when it comes to state game wardens, there's a lot of gray in there. Some go all in enforcing law, some not so much.
Yes, you're correct. Louisiana, the state of Louisiana, I talked to their colonel, which was Len Yoakum at the time when I called down there, and he gave me the best answer of probably any state. Kentucky gave some pretty strong answers. Colorado's pretty strong with it. Kansas was at the time an epic fail. I think some things have changed a little bit, and they're probably getting a little bit more on board with things, but we'll discuss that later. But yes, there's a big difference between, you know, a state game warden is more of a deer upland, you know, and they're going to do their waterfowl stuff, but any of your major waterfowl cases, and the feds will tell you the same thing, they're going to turn that over to us.
Oh, yeah.
And they're at that point, because you're dealing with, I mean, a variety of things. You're dealing with federal stuff, a federal case. Since the birds are crossing state lines, they're all federal. This includes doves, crows, snipe, cranes, anything like that. So once stuff starts crossing federal or state lines like that, it becomes federal. And the federal game wardens, if there's enough of a case there, they want to get involved, and they want to get involved early before too many mistakes are made. And I think Louisiana passes all their cases on to the federal government, to the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. I think they told me in Colorado, around the Denver area, where the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's Migratory Game Bird Division is located, they told me almost word for word that they catch and clean their own. And so he was referring to state guys that are close like that will catch and clean their own, unless it's a big case, to where a lot of your other states will turn stuff over just because it is migratory birds. So there's a huge discrepancy there.
Yeah, and I think that people are so used to seeing state game wardens all the time. State game wardens are your neighbor. They're the guys that are, you invite over for a barbecue on July the 4th. Just good guys. Yeah. They're just out there checking chokes, you know, checking licenses, making sure you got a limit. The thing that you got to understand about a Fed, and I've had this conversation with Ramsey Russell, I've had it with different people. Ramsey used to work in the Department of Interior with the Feds, but these guys are a different breed. They live take you down. That's what they wouldn't be there if something they didn't think or know something was going on.
Yeah.
They're not there to check your license.
And the thing is, people don't realize it, but there is all levels of U.S. Fish and Wildlife Services, from monitoring import exports, you know, coming in and out of the United States, to your Migratory Game Bird Division, which is located in that Loveland, Denver, Colorado area. I mean, those guys that are located up there, you can call their numbers, and they'll give you a voice recording and ask if you want to talk to Special Agent, whoever. And at that point, you can select 222 and talk to whatever Special Agent you want to. Those Special Agents, they get paid to do a job. And their job is to hunt you. And so they spend time on Facebook monitoring what's going on, who's killing what, who's being successful, who's, those piles don't look right. This, there's no separation in those piles. There's no, this doesn't look right. There's way too many ducks there. There's
Ryan, they get off on it. Do they not?
They do. They do. It's, I mean, it's their job. I cut them a little bit of slack like that. My best friend in the entire world is a state trooper, and I would have this conversation with him, and we've had this conversation before. It's like your local sheriff when you live in a town of 800, or your local police guy when you live in a town of 800, or then dealing with a state trooper. The demeanor is different, and people don't realize that. When a federal agent shows up, they're not there to cut you slack and give you warnings. And most of the laws that people are violating, like piles or not separating or not tagging, you know, and even me right there says not separating. Well, not separating is not a law. But I'm so used to hearing it that now I say it. Because what they tell you basically is that, well, if they're separated, we'll cut you a little slack on it. But you don't hear as much of that out of the feds. Most of them will tell you they would like them tagged. They may let you slide with just separating, but they made it clear too that if you had ducks in a bucket and I had ducks in a bucket and they rattled around and tipped over and spilled together in the back on the way out of the field and we get stopped at the quick shop, they're going to write you. Where if those birds are tagged, they're not. But they're not there to cut you any breaks or let you give you a stern warning. There's no intent in the Ryan, tagging law.
Ryan, let me ask you this. How often do you, you know, because you've done tons of research and followed these guys, gotten answers from them, which a lot of people can't. How often do you see them going after, this is feds, just regular private landowners versus somebody that's running a guide service?
It's not as much. They're gonna go to federal refuges and check stuff. They have jurisdiction anywhere, so they can check whoever, wherever. Any of your major lakes or your major waterfowl places, it's the same. I mean, it's just like eagles when they're coming through Kansas. If you find eagles in Kansas, there's waterfowl close. I mean, they're following and hunting the waterfowl. So if you see them sitting on a river within a quarter mile, there's going to be a good group of ducks on that river somewhere that they're waiting to hunt. So, it's a similar thing. The more successful you are, whether an individual or an outfitter, the closer they're going to watch you. Now, 90%, I would say probably 80 to 90% of what the U.S. Fish and Wildlife, the feds are looking for is your outfitters.
Oh, I agree. Because that falls up under the Lacey Act. The Lacey Act, because you're commercializing it.
So it falls under the Lacey Act of 1900. The Lacey Act was, what is the oldest federal law? It was created to basically protect everything. Trees, all sorts of stuff. Certain types of wood can't be harvested. Flowers picked, birds shot, all that stuff. So your Lacey Act is like a blanketed law that was put into place, and it has a bunch of specific laws underneath that. I don't know if blanket's a good word. It's clear what it's trying to say, and it's clear what it's saying, but it's covering everything from flowers to trees to birds to bears to anything, any resource like that is what it's there to protect. It was created in 1900. Actually, there was a couple of governors from, I think, Massachusetts and Wisconsin called Weeks. One was called Weeks and one was called McLean. They made the Weeks-McLean Act of 1913. And it was basically to try to stop market hunters. It wasn't getting the job done. And so then the Migratory Bird Game Treaty Act came into effect. But all of your outfitters, once you start exchanging money or services, or, hey, buy me this truck, I'll take you waterfowl hunting on my club for 6 months, whatever. Once money or things of monetary value start becoming exchanged from one person to another in the amount of, don't quote me on this, but it's like $250 or $275, $275. It's not very much. So any 2 or 3 day hunt, you're going to exceed that. But there's a set value. I'm sorry, I don't know that right now. I probably should have done a little more homework on that. But it's not very much. Most people are going to bypass, so they're going to be over it. But once you exchange stuff for that value or more for the purpose of a hunt, and an illegal activity is done, whether you intentionally did it or unintentionally did it, you start into Lacey Act violations. Remember when Spook Span shot that deer in Kansas? It was like a 230-inch whitetail on film. He claimed he thought he had a landowner's tag and didn't, and then he transported the deer across state lines. Once he did that, that became federal. There was Lacey Act violations in there. That's what a lot of that stuff is. So when you're exchanging money as an outfitter, whether you know or not, if you're committing a violation, a law violation, 99.9% of the time, that's going to fall back and make it a felony under the Lacey Act violation. So if you just went out as an individual, me and you went hunting as friends, and we didn't tag our birds, and a federal game warden stopped us, he'd write us a couple $100 tickets each. If I said I was taking money from you, and had, you know, you had been here hunting 3 days or whatever, and we were doing that, then I would be in violation, and it would be a felony for not tagging. So definitely, and that was my initial contact with you, was to try. I didn't realize you were tagging at the time, because probably about 80% of the people are more, probably more than that, probably closer to 90% are not tagging. So when I reached out to you initially, it was a cold call. You look like you're running a successful business. I couldn't visibly see tags on your pictures. So, you know, a lot of times.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that you did for me, though, Ryan, is you got me where we were tagging from the field. See, yeah. We were just tagging once we got back to the truck. Hey, let me tie these around, you know, your tote with your ducks on it. And one of the things that you taught me, hey, I need to keep them in my blind bag. But, you know, before we get out of the field, they need to be tagged.
Yeah. You're safer that way. And like I said, it's not necessarily a law at that point. But when a game warden or a federal agent walks up and you have your game tote there and he says, or it's sitting by your leg, or your gun's laying over it and you're 5 foot away, picking up your blind bag, and he says, hey, whose birds are these? I said, oh, they're mine. I just laid them over there with my gun while I was picking up this blind bag. And when he flips the tag over and sees your name on it, he says, are you Rocky? Yeah. Okay. That makes sense. So they're just a lot happier. I have several pictures that guys have randomly sent me in the field where they have piles and are tagged, and a game warden truck sitting in the background, and they've said, "Hey, thanks. Yeah, I mean, you really helped us out. This could have been a train wreck because I had like 60 birds down." So,
well, I know with you being on here, there's going to be a lot of people listening to this podcast from the Midwest. They're going to follow this series from beginning to end. We'll jump off into the story next week, but you know, the Midwest right now, that Nebraska, Kansas, Oklahoma corridor, Texas, North Texas, that's the hottest place in America right now for waterfowling, whether it be the, you know, your small Canada geese or ducks. And man, yeah. I can tell you now, I've even heard it. I don't know any fits. I've heard it through the grapevine. Man, they are everywhere up through those five states.
They are. And their main, like I said, their main office for the Migratory Game Bird Division is Denver, Colorado, which is 6 hours. So, I mean, they have a hunch. It's as simple as, hey, let's get up in the morning, drive down there.
I'll tell you, Bill, have you ever heard this? Have you ever heard this right here? That there are some feds, federal game wardens, that cannot stand for somebody to commercialize waterfowling.
You're exactly right. They probably, and I'm unsure why. I've never just asked them. I've never wanted to put that dog in the fight when I'm getting information out of them and getting along with them and trying to work with them to educate people. But, yeah, for sure. And that's just in general. And even on the state level. Your state level guys really put a lot of resistance into your outfitters and stuff too. And you may not think so. And we'll get into it further along, but I was a part-time cop at one point when I was an outfitter and I was eating lunch with game wardens, backing them up on calls. I was a full-time sheriff's deputy, backed them up for sure on calls during that time, and was only guiding on my days off. So I knew these guys, and as I became an outfitter, I asked them to go hunting with me, and, you know, while I'm working. And I would tell them, hey, we're going to be right here. You can come check us. Not one time on the state level was I ever warned about tagging. Never even heard of it. So, yeah, there's for sure, they don't like it.
Ryan, as you look back on it, without going in depth, as you look back on it, what happened to you? Was being surprised, being just bamboozled, hammered, just killed by them, just being surprised by all of it, just the biggest shock, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, you don't, and I can say this because I'm a waterfowl hunter, but they're a different breed of people, and a lot of them are real arrogant, and I've never met one that doesn't know everything. But I was one of those too, and I thought I knew everything, and thought I was doing everything right. I thought I knew the law better than most. The game wardens, I thought, were my friends. They were there. Never once was anything mentioned about anything I was ever doing wrong. A few nights before that surprise, I had made a call because I had the local game warden's number. I made a call and said, hey, a landowner called me and somebody shot a deer on his wheat field and drove off. And he said, knowing that I used to be a cop, he said, will you kind of sit off there somewhere and see if somebody comes back? I'm an hour away. And I said, yeah, no problem. I said, I'll meet you when you get here and show you where it's at. Waited for him, had him, showed him where it was at. He sat on it that night, ended up leaving it. Somebody came back and got it. and whatever, but it was, there was a lot of emotion there. You know, surprise was one of them, hurt, anger. I mean, there's going to be a lot that comes out that you hear, that, you know, disappointment, you're disappointed in yourself. You didn't know any better. You didn't pay attention. So, but I would say surprise was probably for sure there.
I'll say this, for all you guys that are guides, outfitters, big clubs, pay attention to the next few episodes of Ryan. Man, don't let what happened to Ryan happen to you. And Ryan, you've told this, you've told kind of a generalized story on a couple other podcasts, but don't go searching for it. You need to follow this series.
You'll get a lot of detail out of this. I think you'll find, if you're an outfitter or even just a regular hunter that hunts with a group of people, I think you'll find beneficial information in here. And my phone's always open too. I've told people that. I mean, I told you that when I called you. If you ever have a question or need something, holler. I'll help you for free. And if I don't know the answer, I'll find it. I'm not going to lie to you to try to cover something up. I mean, I'm going to give you the best information I know based on what they've told me. And to be real honest with you, 99% of what I'm giving you, all the questions or answers have been given on a recorded line. I have hours of recorded conversation with state and federal game wardens.
Well, next week, Ryan, let's talk about you a little bit personally. Let's talk about jumping off into waterfowling and being a guide. And we'll ease into part of the story next week. How about that?
Sounds good.
All right, bud. Well, thank you, Ryan. Thank you for being here. I appreciate you sharing your story. Like I said, it's one that you're going to want to follow. Really good. It is. I don't want to give this part of the story away. It's really full-esque.
I think it'll be worth listening to for sure.
Ryan, you and Jeff, y'all are friends, right?
Yes. Yeah, me and Jeff have a history. We still do. He's still a friend of mine. We don't talk a lot, but we talk quite a bit. We talk probably more at certain stages of both of our issues. I mean, initially,
yeah.
I didn't hear from him much. Then throughout the middle, I heard from him quite a bit and talked to Tim Grounds quite a bit, you know, about Jeff and whatever. And then got to where I was talking to Jeff quite a bit. And then I got in my situation. And I knew he would know, so I talked to him more. And, you know, we've hunted together and things, so. Be interesting.
Do you ever think the two, without giving it all away, do you ever think the two somehow were related? They were cousins, the two cases?
Yeah. I mean, based on things they've said.
All right. That's all I want. No, you're not telling any more.
Yeah, I would say yeah.
And not related in the sense of, it just, they kind of want either, you know, one fed off the other. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
But, Ryan, thank you again, man.
We'll
appreciate
indulge
it.
In that.
We'll
indulge
get back
in that
together
down the road.
Yeah, we'll get back together the first part of next week. That's the plan right now. We want to thank all of you that listened to this edition of the End of the Line podcast, powered by DuckSouth.com.